If you want to go far in politics, you have to have a good slogan. You've got to have the soundbite that the media likes to pick up on. Hope. Remember those posters? Make America great again. Goes good on a hat. Build back better. The budget will balance itself. Okay, I couldn't resist putting that one in. But you get the point, right? A political slogan has to be something that captivates imaginations, that gets people excited, that underlines very succinctly exactly what this particular politician, this candidate, is all about. It helps to sell the brand. It helps to get the crowds, the followers, all riled up and excited, waving placards, cheering with great enthusiasm for their candidate. This is the person to vote for. This is the person who will fix our problems. Hosanna, Hosanna. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Not a particularly great political slogan. Not one that was devised by think tanks and by sponsors and all that goes into grooming a candidate. This came from the cheers of the crowds who had followed Jesus as he made his way to Jerusalem. The crowds expecting that Jesus, the rightful king of Israel, the rightful heir of David, was coming at last to claim what is rightfully his. Hosanna, Hosanna. You see, what we're seeing here is a bit of political theater. Jesus riding in to the king, to the city of David, to proclaim his kingship. In a way that if people who are familiar with the story of Israel would have recognized David coming in on a donkey. It's in the Old Testament. You can read that story for yourself. They would have understood the prophecy of Zechariah coming to fruition, that all their hopes to make Israel great again, to build up better than what has been before, to undo what the Romans have done, here now is their hope coming before them riding on a donkey. Of course, the people are overjoyed, at any political rally. Instead of placards, they're waving palm branches and cheering and shouting, "This is the one! This is the guy who will save us from all that ails us." But there's a great reversal that goes on in the events of Holy Week. It's a reversal that no one except the Lord himself saw coming. Jesus was very clear with his disciples. The Son of Man will go up to Jerusalem and will be tortured and killed. And of course, they couldn't believe this. We know the story of Peter. "Never, Lord. I will not allow it to happen. Not on my watch." "Get behind me, Satan. You do not know what you are talking about." Of course, our readings from last week, where James and John send their mother. "Okay, we're going to go to Jerusalem, Mom. Make sure that now that Jesus is going to make his kingship known, that we get part of the pomp and the pageantry and the power that comes with that." But the expectations get completely reversed. In the same way that the reversal of the crowds goes from "Hosanna, Hosanna," to "Crucify him, crucify him." There's so much that goes on in the human heart and mind. Our imaginations can be captured by the news of the day, captured by whatever political party or politician we support. And of course, we'll do everything we can to follow them, to get them into power, to get them elected. But woe to the one who betrays his followers, who doesn't deliver what was promised and expected. The followers will turn on that person, that candidate, like that. Off with their head. Be gone with them. They no longer serve our purpose. They did not deliver everything they promised. Out they go. What must have it been like for Jesus riding on that donkey, knowing that the people who followed him closely, his apostles, that intimate gathering of 12, that among them was the one who would betray him, the one who would deny him, and the other 10 who would ultimately flee from him. He knew what would happen, and yet here they are praising with the crowds, getting riled up and caught in all the excitement. What was it like for Jesus to walk through those crowds knowing the hearts and minds of every single person there? Jesus is riding to his doom. He knows it, but the crowd doesn't know it. Because again, the crowd is expecting their Messiah, their deliverer, to come and rescue them. But Jesus is objectively hated and despised. He's not merely misunderstood. Because people who are misunderstood, we can easily do away with them. We can ignore them. We can just kind of, that's just them talking out of nonsense out of their ears. They don't know what they're talking about. But Jesus here is objectively hated and despised. He is riding to his doom. The lips of the people, there may be praise on those lips, but in their hearts and minds, there's nothing but hatred, objectively despising. It's hard for us to wrap our heads around that because we would say, no, I would never be like that. Of course not. I love Jesus. I would never do that. But yet again, there are those in his inner circle, let alone the crowds, who so quickly turned. And the events of Holy Week invite us to do that hard work of reflecting inwardly. Where am I in this story? Where am I in my understanding of who Jesus is and what he has come to do? I was showing a clip to my boys of Tombstone. Great movie, by the way, and please don't judge me for showing my boys that movie, but it's a good one. But the first question that they asked without any context is, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, right? You look at a cowboy movie, you see a bunch of cowboys, they've all got hats and guns, they all kind of look the same. And if you know Tombstone, the Earp brothers are all wearing black, and usually the black cowboys are the bad ones. And so the question rightly is, well, who's the good guys and who's the bad guys? And when we ask that question of ourselves, of course I'm the good guy. I'm on the winning side. I'm on the right side. I'm not the bad guys. But that's what Holy Week is inviting us to do. Where am I in this story? It's why when we've just participated in that collective reading of the story of the Passion, the words of the crowds on our lips. Now, we may say we're saying those words, but I don't really mean them in my heart. But the reality is that stripped away of all the trappings of our lives, at the end, we'll find ourselves not just misunderstanding Jesus, but objectively despising him because of everything he asks me to do. Of everything he asks me to believe of himself, of everything he asks from me. Because what he asks from me is everything. What he asks me to give him is my heart and my mind, the entirety of my being, holding nothing back and saying, here, Jesus, fix it. But too often we say, no, it's not broken, it's not that bad. I like it the way it is, you can maybe give some fine-tuning, just a little bit of religion, a little bit of piety, just to make me, enough to make me feel good about myself. But no, when it's all stripped away, there we are saying, crucify him, kill him, I want nothing to do with him, because everything he asks of me, I reject, because he asks too much. All of us have a Messiah-shaped hole in our hearts and minds, a Messiah-shaped hole in our imaginations, in the core of who we are. And we so often fill that Messiah-shaped hole with whatever political leader promises us the best for us, whatever the leaders of opinion, the scientific leaders of our age, whatever leaders there happen to be, we look to them to say, aha, here's the person that will fix it all with this policy, with this cure, with whatever. But the great reversal of Holy Week is that it strips us of all that and says, no, here comes your king riding to you on a donkey. Donkeys are not particularly attractive animals. They don't exactly have the nicest sound. They're not animals that we look to as animals that display beauty and majesty. They're beasts of burden. They're what we throw things on that we don't want to carry because they are strong. They're built for carrying things. They're squat and strong. And so here we have Jesus, the Son of God, taking on the burden of humanity, taking all of the sin, taking all of the brokenness, taking all of the woundedness on himself, as the beast of burden, as the Messiah who will correct this. So here we have Jesus riding on a beast of burden as a beast of burden, riding to his doom and riding to our collective doom. But we know the end of the story, of course. We know that his doom becomes his victory. That great reversal that Satan himself could have never seen coming, because if he had, he wouldn't have allowed it to unfold the way it did. Where his doom becomes his victory, our doom becomes our victory. You see, that's why Satan could have never predicted this coming, because he cannot understand humility. He cannot understand meekness. He thought, if I can just get the crowds to turn against Jesus, they'll do the work for me. But Jesus goes headlong into the crowd and says, I'm taking you with me because that's the only way I'm going to save you. It's that great reversal of his life for ours. Even though we were the ones who put him there, even though we were the ones that professed to love him and would follow him to his very death, the ones who fled at the sight of danger, he said, it's okay. It's okay, because my victory is your victory. So as Jesus is walking through those crowds, he knows the hearts and minds of every single person there. He knows our hearts and minds too, and he says, I will take you with me, so that where I am, you may be also, and I will never leave you or forsake you. Even though you may leave me and you may forsake me, I don't work that way. So as we enter into this Holy Week, may we do that inward reflection of asking, where am I in the midst of all this? And when we find ourselves failing, put the burden on the one who's riding the beast of burden, because he's come to carry it for us, that we may have his life in us forevermore. Thanks be to God.